How should you act? The mind is the most important perfection, is perfection of the intellect, not the ethical perfection. He classes that as the third perfection, right? First is money, body, ethics, and then intelligence. So if that's the case, we asked, so why is it? The Gemara says, for instance, a person has lomed lekanter. He learns in order to destroy others. The Gemara says that he has no chevel no abo. All these cases, apparently ethical perfection is very important. Without ethical perfection, you can't have a chevel no abo. Yet the Rambam says that that's not an important perfection. I know why... this bit of knowledge should be more important than the other knowledge. A man is a mathematical genius. He knows science, physics, chemistry, universe, everything. And yet he has one little mistake. And we say that because of that mistake, he loses everything. That's the question.
So another question. One
mistake?
Yeah.
Yes. Is something that is what we said. I think in the last tape. I think we have it that way. That's Plato's approach. One of the philosophers says like this. He says that he maintains that Olam Haba is the place where a person receives that which he desires. The place where a person receives that which he desires. Now therefore, insofar as a person is attached to the physical, naturally he can't have a pot in Olam Haba, because it's not the place for him. And what he wants isn't there. It's not a punishment that he doesn't... I guess punished in Olam Haba, but there's no place for such activities there. However, insofar as a person is attached to the metaphysical, so then he has a place in Olam Haba, because Olam Haba is not a place where there's a body, and Chazal emphasizes. Chazal say Olam Haba in lo guf lo gviya. There's no amida, there's no yeshiva, there's no achila, there's no shsiya, right? So Chazal say that there's no bodily functions do not exist there. And therefore, he who is attached, he whose soul, whose nature, whose essential self, inner self, is attached to physical pleasures, just simply has no place over there. There's nothing he can do there. However, he who is attached to the objects that exist there, his activity does prevail, can continue over there. And that's why we said the Rambam says that it goes. It says lefi rov chachmaso, lefi maisa v'rov chachmaso zocha. Right? Why does Rambam say what's the correlation really between actions, deeds, and chachma? Because we said that there is a ratio between the two. In other words, if you have maisim, you see maisim actions show how there's two factors in order to be attached to something. There's two factors. The one factor is how much of the energy available a person uses is set aside, designated for a certain activity. Right? That's a quantitative factor. The other factor is how much of the activity he is capable of doing. You see? You know what I mean? Like a person can have all his energies, but he's not a good carpenter. A person can be a good carpenter, he has the skill, but he doesn't have all his energies involved in carpentry. He's watching television while he's making a table. Might be very good, but he will make mistakes because he's not involved in it. So we said attachment really requires two things. It requires, first of all, that a person should have all his energies involved in that which he is doing. But secondly, you cannot speak of attachment to a greater degree than the person's actual performance. In other words, if a performance in an area, let's say, for instance, a person is a carpenter, and he really isn't, he can't build anything, he can't say he's involved in carpentry, not because he's personally not involved. He's involved, but he's not building anything. So it lacks in carpentry because the performance itself is not carpentry. You see? So we said the same thing is with Chachma. The appreciation of Chachma requires two things. First of all, it requires that the person's energies should be, there's one element One element is how much of his energies are devoted to knowledge, and the second one is how much knowledge he really is involved in. That's dependent upon his chachma. If a man doesn't have any chachma, let's say a person is unfortunately unintelligent, so then you can't really say he's involved in knowledge, and he can't have the tremendous appreciation of knowledge for the simple reason he doesn't, what he's involved in is not knowledge. See? There has to be two things. There are two elements. These two elements work side by side in order to, and together, what emerges is the how much attachment he has to knowledge. So that's why the Rambam says, "Lefi ma'isav v'rov chachmaso zocha," according to his actions and according to his chachma. What is the combination? What type of combination is this? These two things work hand in hand because, in other words, you could have, for instance, a person who has a higher level of chachma, who's more intelligent, but if he isn't involved very much, he might have a smaller chelek and olam haba than another individual who is involved, has a tremendous amount of involvement, even though his chachma is not that great. But he is still attached more to chachma by virtue of the fact that all his energies are directed to chachma. You see? So, you understand what I'm saying? So the two, you see, the two work, the two are complementary. You understand what I mean? But it works out in such a way that you can have a ratio between the two. Like you have a person who has a higher degree of A and a lower degree of B, it will be equal to a person who has the exact opposite. You know what I mean? A higher degree of B and a lower degree of A. You follow? That's the way it will work out. Because there's two factors that are necessary in terms of involvement, in terms of how much attachment he has to the area. One is how much available energy is being used, and the question is the performance itself. Now, a greater person who has a greater ability to perceive chachma has more enjoyment of chachma for the simple reason that he has more chachma. That itself, people always say, "If only guy must have been jumping every minute, because with his mind, he's always constantly seeing chedushim." Of course, I would assume. I mean, it was true. That's why you find also the people who are great chachamim. The greater the chacham, doesn't find it really difficult to learn. Because as he learns, there's more things, he's uncovering more things. But a person sits by a gemara for an hour, 2 hours, and doesn't uncover anything, naturally for him it's more difficult. You see? That's why you have to learn. What we say is that these two work together. Now, when the Rambam says that ethical perfection, so why does the Rambam say really that ethical perfection is unimportant, he sort of puts it down, he says it's only important on an island, you wouldn't need it. What does he mean? Why does he say, if that's the case, ethical perfection is very important? That seems to be a contradiction. Because the Rambam in Yad HaChazaka says, Lefi Maisav is ethical perfection. What do you say? Maisav is ethical perfection. The proof is, there's no Maisav in mitzvah, no olam haba. So you see that's ethical perfection. Yes.
Oh yeah, he means ethical.
Ethical perfection, as an objective in itself. When he speaks of the four perfections, he means that the four perfections as an end in themselves. Money for the sake of money. Physical prowess for the sake of bodily perfection. And ethical perfection for the sake of ethical perfection. He says, as an end, he says, it has no purpose. The only end you can have is a social end in ethical perfection. You follow what I mean? That's the only end that it could possibly have. Everybody's ethically perfected, so now you have a good society. But if that's the whole purpose, then you understand there's no reason for this if the person was on an island. He says, right, you understand what I'm saying? But ethical perfection, there's a different ethical perfection. It is necessary for a person to perfect his midos so that he could remove all the energies that are involved in other areas, remove them, withdraw them, and involve them in this area, in the area of knowledge. Insofar as that's concerned, that's an important ethical perfection, but that's not ethical perfection for the sake of ethical perfection. That's for the sake of knowledge. That's the end. That's very important. That's extremely important. You see. It says, Taisis Akasha in Brachas. The Gemara says that Lo'olam Yasag Odom B'Teira U'B'Mitzvahs Shelo L'Shma Shemitech Shelo L'Shma Bo L'Shma. Alright, plain shot in the memory would seem that if L'Shma doesn't come, it's worthless. That's the plain shot in the memory, because the Gemara says Shemitech Shelo L'Shma Bo L'Shma. I never saw anybody say differently, and I would assume that those seem to be the correct interpretation. That's only because if it was really good in itself, the Gemara would just have to stop there. Well, when the Asa got him, the Torah mitzvahs, I feel the Shalom Lashma. That's it. Apparently, because it'll come to Lashma. All right. Now, the Gemara, however, says, another Gemara says, that a person who learns Torah for the sake of destroying others, just to refute others, to be able to show how great he is in learning, then the Gemara says that it's worthless. Mutav she'nepach shel yasa panav. Would have been better, in simple language, it means it would have been better if he wouldn't have been born. His existence is equal to his non-existence. A totally worthless existence. So, Taisa says, would seem from that second chazal, that it's not something that a person should do. Not something a person should do. What? What's really the difference between the two? What's the difference between the two? Why is it? What is the difference between Shelo Lishmo and between Lakanter? Let's define what the difference is. One case, we say, we give a person advice, we say, look, you're not on a level to appreciate the benefit of mitzvahs. A person really should daven not because he feels an obligation to daven. He should have a desire to daven because he recognizes the benefit that he gains from it. It's an enjoyable experience. That's something he should be drawn to it. See? A person should learn because he's drawn to it, not because he feels they have to learn. The have to should be relegated to other areas of life. Have to make a living, have to do this, that. But over here, this should be something which he's drawn to, recognizes the benefit. Now, the question is, but nevertheless, the Gemara says, even if you don't recognize the benefit, do it. Because maybe through, even more than a maybe, I mean, the Gemara says, like, it seems like it's not like a probability, that through doing the performances, you'll be improved yourself, and once you're improved, you will raise yourself to a higher level. Now, what's wrong with, what's wrong with Lakanta? Why is Lakanta not good? Person learns to be doing it Lakanter, and nobody knows. As a matter of fact, all the more brachas are there. They threw out to the other guys who were Lakanter. How do you know they're Lakanter? The Rishonim write like that, you know? No. There's a difference. Boop, boop. You work it out. What's the philosophy of Chazal there? Chazal didn't just say things, it has to be worked out. Why did Rambam say that the more knowledge a person has, the more humble he becomes? On the contrary, says knowledge causes a person to
power.
Yeah. So I have more knowledge than this guy, I have more than now, I'm on the top. I have the most knowledge of any individual.
Why that
guy is satisfied in saying, look, I have more knowledge than anyone alive today.
That alone is proof of lack of knowledge.
Like this. Just want to explain what he's mentioning. When you say that knowledge makes a person humble, we really should ask the question ourselves. I mean, this is a rough question. Why should it be that way? On the contrary. A person who plays basketball and can play better than anybody else, he doesn't realize how little basketball he can play. On the contrary, he says, I can play terrifically, playing better than anybody else.
But there you're dealing with Gashmius, you're not dealing with...
Where's the difference? We like to see clearly wherein lies the difference between knowledge and between...
Physical.
Where's the difference? Good question. Basketball, the essence of basketball is the competitive. Without the competitive, I mean, there's no basketball. The whole idea is, in other words, if a person, for instance, the game, the concept of a game is a competitive concept. A person wouldn't go out and just play the game, as far as he himself is concerned. Therefore, the greater he is in relationship to others, that's the essence of the game. The essence of the game is to win. So therefore, the greater he is, the more he wins. That shows that it makes one a higher level. But as far as learning and knowledge is concerned, the knowledge is the study of the infinite. The very subject is the study of the infinite. Subject is infinite. Now, since the subject is the study of the infinite, the more he attempts to take to get a grasp on reality, he's trying to get a grasp on reality. Now, the more man tries to get a grasp on it, he sees he answers one problem, but then another problem appears. And he starts seeing how complex the area is. Really, that's the one thing that man can see from all his knowledge. Is the more knowledge that he has, is he begins to see that there is a system here. He begins to see the magnitude of the system. See? The more he gets involved in it, the greater he sees. His scope becomes enlarged. And he sees how great the system is. That's what makes him feel humble. See? So that one physicist said that the problems grow with the solutions. With the solution, all of a sudden, but then this basic thing is what we don't understand. So he starts seeing, he gets a scope. A person who's ignorant can think he has a lot of knowledge because he doesn't even know the area. He doesn't know what the dimensions are, what the properties are. But the more a person is involved in knowledge, the more he starts seeing He starts seeing something, a panorama is unraveling, and yet beyond it is a deep abyss. He sees this is an unbelievable thing here. But a person who's ignorant can be very haughty because he doesn't see this. He thinks a little knowledge has a lot. Whereas insofar as something which is physical, first of all, it's finite, like you mentioned, and he approaches the finite. There's a finite concept in anything physical which he does, and he starts approaching the finite, so he thinks he's great. But I want you to understand one thing. That might be true. So what he's saying really is true. He's saying it's true. But it depends on how and why the person learns. You see, we do see, in fact, that a lot of people are tremendous Bali Gaiva because of their knowledge. Tremendous. As a matter of fact, the Rambam has a whole letter. It's not a letter, actually. It's from his medical writings, but somebody put it in the back of the Igros. He speaks about the Machlo Hanushis, the human disorder of ego. And he says that people who have knowledge and are acclaimed for their knowledge are more susceptible to the disease of ego, he says, than others. As a matter of fact, he says, the more they are renowned, he says, the more danger there is of them falling into this evil trait. Now, why is that so? Because there are two aspects. There is, insofar as the study per se, man is relating to the infinite. That would lend them to humility. But insofar as he's in competition with others, you see, then he's in the world of the relative. Now, a person could remain in the world of the relative and outrule the infinite.
You think
it's still possible for a person to be in the world of the infinite, but he's not interested. He's only interested in the comparative gains that he's making. That's the case, so that's not going to lead to humility. But his answer is not refuted, though, because nevertheless, what he said is correct. It is true that in the area, while it is possible for him to always remain in the world of the relative, nevertheless, the subject matter itself gives him a great opportunity to go into the world of the infinite, because that's the nature of the subject matter. Therefore, it's possible that he will improve himself. Correct? But why do we say that he's saying? He's saying that's insofar as the meat of ego is concerned. Whereas insofar as lakanter, let's say aggression, so there is no cure for the aggression in the knowledge. There's no cure for the aggression in knowledge. There's no cure for the aggression in knowledge. Yes.
What do you think?
Concerning once he gets drawn into the world of knowledge, it will pull him out of the... this is the question I have to ask. We could argue up and back, but let's really see. Let's try to see if we can prove something. If a person, let's say a person's not learning lakanter. Person's not learning Lakanta. But everybody has their aggressions and their bad meters, correct? Now, since this is so, does Torah improve all the midos, or does Torah only improve certain midos? So I'm not talking about a person that's learning Lakanta. Learning Lakanta means that's essentially what he's learning for. Sole purpose in life is Lakanta. That's the Gemara Hard Rules. But everybody has their little, in smaller degrees of Lakanta or whatever, or other bad midos, plenty of bad midos, right? So does Torah improve a person insofar as removing him from all his bad midos in general, or not? What do you say? The Gemara says, Barasi Yetzahara, Barasi Taratavlan. The Gemara says that the real way to cure the person's evil inclinations is through Torah. That's what the Gemara says.
Barasi
Yetzahara. Yeah. But Barasi Yetzahara, the Gemara is talking about Bria Salam. Sefer Rashi Letzadik. Gemara says that Barasi Yetzirah, the Torah Tavlin seems to work on everything. So how does it work on everything? How does it work on everything? Yes, good. He starts appreciating knowledge. He starts enjoying knowledge, and he sees the greatness of this enjoyment. All the other enjoyments are like nothing for him. All the other enjoyments, his aggressions, his this, his eating, his sleeping, all the kaivas that he has become nothing. Because he starts recognizing that there's something here that is of much, much greater, a different type of enjoyment, which is much greater, much more lasting, much more valuable in this world. I'm not talking about Allah, in this world. And he recognizes that this is a fantastic enjoyment that he really should involve himself in. And it removes him from everything else. All the taivas. But it's interesting. But the Gemara says, but not if it's lakanter. Lakanter, apparently the Gemara doesn't hold that way. See, that's what the Gemara is saying. That if it's shalol lishmot, this is possible to take place. But Lakanta, no. Why not Lakanta? Apparently the Gemara holds, I'm not talking about the specific difference, the question you asked before, but apparently the Gemara holds that it depends. In other words, a person, it's possible for this occurrence to take place. But it's also possible for a person's prime motive to be, and the prime objective to be such, that no matter how much learning he does, he will never be in a position to appreciate the learning. Because the only he's just using it as a tool. When could you have the appreciation if there's objectivity? Man is objectively involved in knowledge, so there's a chance for appreciation. Man walks into an art store and he sees a beautiful painting. It's a possibility that he'll be enthralled. So wow, this fantastic painting. But if a person goes into the store, let's say for the sole purpose of buying something, of making a dollar, and he has no appreciation whatsoever of it, there's very little chance that he's going to get involved. I'm just trying to give an illustration. See? Now, apparently, the Gemara holds that it depends. If the person really goes in a certain situation objectively, it's possible that he will have the enjoyment. However, if his whole motivation is something else, and he's only using this as a means, then it's quite possible that, on the contrary, then it's probable. The Gemara says that's why we won't. He'll never have any appreciation of knowledge, and that's why Chazal hold that lekanter is also not only that, but the Gemara says v'samtem. The Gemara says that learning v'samtem is devar eila. So the Gemara says zocha if he zocha nasa lo sam chayim becomes something a sama of life. Lo zocha nasa lo sam amavis. The Gemara maintains that learning could be something which exists for the destruction of the individual. That means that it's something which is just the opposite. On the contrary, he becomes more rooted in the physical. And Torah is just the means. And loses chayal mabon, chayal mas, everything. What is it? Which means la'olam would imply even if he's on a high level already. You know what I mean? Yeah, it says la'olam. So la'olam means keep on trying. Maybe it'll become l'shma. Okay? People are sincerely in search of truth. Before that, they didn't have it. They said, look, that's your private business. We don't care. You have a good kasha? We'll get a kasha. What's the difference with what you are? They changed over. They said that, no, it has to be... It's an interesting thing. It's an interesting gemara there. Whether you should allow people in the basement or should allow the shema. On the one hand, you're like, what do you care what he's doing it for? But if he has good kasha, good kasha. Finally, gemara held it. Yeah, it helps out in the country. It's good. But he had a shita. His shita was. It wasn't because of ego. It wasn't that a question of ego. He didn't care because if you go through that mice over there, you see in the country, it didn't bother him at all. Next day he was taken off his position. Next day he was in the basement, it didn't bother him at all. It wasn't like a political position there. But he held that terror can't grow that way. That's not the way to have terror grow. But at any rate, Lakanta could be big time Lakanta. Tremendous time Lakanta. Yeah.
Are you giving the answer now?
Yeah.
Unless you want to... True either. You're right. I think you're right. He's right in the sense, in the comparison, he's definitely right. Over there, it's much easier because people don't know. I mean, let's say you have a PhD in chemistry. Nobody's going to go around questioning. And you're right that in learning, the area of learning, since it goes by the reputation is built by the knowledge, so you can't do it without having knowledge. All right. That's a good argument. But the only thing is I say that it's not necessarily true. Not necessarily true. Of course, for instance, there are certain things which are, in the eyes of the Hamon, carry a lot of weight, like Bakias. You know, Bakias is something a person is tremendous. Bucky quotes from here and there. And there are a lot of people that know how to show their Bakias in a way that people are astounded, you know? I know a guy that used to learn through the Shalos and Tshuvos. He'd read the Shiloh. And he had pretty good memory. Shaila and the last line of Tshuva. Straight through. Go through hundreds of Shalos and Tshuvas. That way he had a good memory. So the man sounds like he learned through a tremendous amount of Shalos and Tshuvas. This guy is unbelievable. You know? He just read the first line and the last line. You know? The whole Tshuva he missed. The whole line. But he sounds like he knows... So there is a possibility in this area also to put up a front which is fraudulent. I guess in any area it's always possible. But he's right; it's not as easy as it is in other areas. But I would approach from a different angle. Let's try from a different angle. Let's say this: that the of course in each case there is another motivation besides the one of Lishma. But we have to measure the motivations in terms of how it affects the individual. All right. Now, in case, let's take the case of honor, right? And I ask you a question. Is honor and knowledge mutually exclusive? Are they mutually exclusive, inherently? In other words, is it possible to have knowledge and have honor? Yes. They're not mutually exclusive, right? In other words, because since the man is interested in the honor of being known as a man of knowledge, as you mentioned, so therefore, it doesn't necessarily cause the person to leave knowledge. Because he can achieve the honor through knowledge as well, through real knowledge as well. It is true if he doesn't have real knowledge, and somebody asks him a kasha in a shir, and he's going to get embarrassed, so he might fumf over there, and I'll give one of his answers just to get by it publicly. Right. But it's not a tati to sasri. It's not a tati. He doesn't necessarily have to be that way. You see? He could really perfect himself more and gain the honor through having real knowledge. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
Honor and knowledge are not tied to the sasri. But let's take Lakanter. What is Lakanter? Lakanter means to break down somebody else, right? Criticize, break down, destroy somebody else's premises. Is that a tati de sasri with knowledge or not? What do you say? What? Just a second. Exactly. So it is a tati de sasri. Because if the person who you are criticizing is saying something which is true, then you of necessity have to deny it, which means you have to distort the knowledge. So therefore, you are involved in a pursuit which is completely contrary to knowledge. In the case, that's why the Gemara says that if your prime motivation is lakanta, to break somebody else down, then your learning is worthless. Don't learn Torah. There's no need to learn Torah. The contrary is worse for you. Sit home, watch television. Much better. But if, why? Because that pursuit is tati de sasri with knowledge. Tati de sasri. Because you want to break down the other person's premise. Now, the other person might be a big Talmud Chacham. The other person is a Rashi. He's sitting in a Yashir. He's saying this pshat and tesis. You come in there, you want to break him down. So therefore, if it's the right pshat, you're going the opposite way. Then that means your motivation is totally in contradiction with knowledge. Masha'ina came with honor. Honor isn't a tati de sasri. It's the wrong reason to do it. But it's not an inherent tie to the sasri. So if it's not an inherent tie to the sasri, it's possible for a person to be approved.
What?
In other words, we don't care what the outcome is. It's not the outcome that's important. It's the intention. If the intention is in line with knowledge, in other words, they're parallel, it's possible, one does not rule the other, then he could reach it. He could reach, what the Gemara is saying is like this. Chazal tell us that if your intention is such, which doesn't outrule knowledge, I don't care if you're doing it for an auxiliary reason, different reason, but the point is it doesn't outrule it. That's your intention isn't to outrule knowledge. If your intention is the kanter, then the intention directly is to wipe out knowledge. You are on a path right now in which knowledge plays no role at all in your mode. On the contrary, your motivation is such that you wish to distort knowledge. Then you'll never be able to reach it. It's the motivation. It's the motivation that's important. The motivation is such which is totally contrary to knowledge.
Break down the other guy. He has to believe what he says. And like,
oh, it's the way.
Truth. That's the
only
thing.
It's the way. It's like,
inherently, he may still have knowledge of the truth.
In a situation where he went to the country on a business trip, but he sees the scenery. He's enthralled. Right. He's taken in. All right. There's no tie to the sasri between the two. But if a person can have such motivations, which because of the motivation, see, the motivation is such that it outrules any possibility of him objectively seeing that which is shown to him. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm asking. Why is it out? Isn't it possible that he can break somebody else down?
Yes.
And he'll
be opposite of knowledge. In other words, it's one. It's a motivation. His motivation alone is something which completely. The antithesis of knowledge, right? He's outruling knowledge in his very motivation. Then we say he'll never get there. In other words, it depends on what the motivation is. The person's motivation is such where it allows knowledge to enter, then it's possible he'll see knowledge. But if his motivation is such where inherently that motivation outrules knowledge, then he will never be able to see because of that state of mind. It's the frame of mind. You know what I mean? It's not the result. It's the frame of mind that is in. In other words, what's his purpose? It's the frame of mind which precedes the result. It's true, like he said, he can meet a society where all the people are wrong, so he'll be a great chacham. But that won't help him, he won't mean anything. He'll never come to the appreciation of learning, because he isn't concerned with that. His concern is towards something which completely outrules knowledge. Yes? Was only insofar as he has an appreciation of the truth.
He doesn't recognize
it. He has appreciation.
Doesn't
Shlomo
enjoy the ideas
more? Okay. He enjoys the ideas, and he wouldn't be learning the content. All he enjoys is breaking down somebody else. So that's what we're saying. You have to realize the personality we're talking about. It's not a personality whose sole enjoyment is to break down somebody else. That's it. If his enjoyment is in knowledge, that's not the content anymore. Then he's learning for a real purpose. Yes. He can only go by the knowledge that he has. Right. But the only, yeah, that's another question. In other words, your question is, how can a person ever perfect himself because he doesn't know what his motivations are? Move knowledge. That's a different area. Okay. But we're assuming right now that a person can know what he how to perfect himself or what he should do in some way. Maybe not ultimately, but in some small way. So in that realm, we want to know how he should function. Assuming that a person does have some idea of what of his nature. Yes. Each one's looking to the other one.
Yeah.
Perfection and sidetrack.
No.
I think that the Rambam, you haven't got the Marne Vochem here. I think what we said was, we answered the Rambam based on the Rambam and the Yad HaZaka. From the Myra, it seems that there's something else over here, another factor involved, in terms of ethical perfection. Yes. He says, "Oisim mitzvahs v'tar from lebefana." Mitzvahs are worthless. He does mitzvahs and they throw it in his face. Ram says, "Rasha, person's on a bad level. Person on a low level." Ram describes how tshuva works. That it goes from one extreme to the other extreme. So the Ram says, "Yesterday, this individual was the farthest away from God." Mishukas and Rufa Maseva. He says, and he does mitzvahs. Does mitzvahs v'tar from lebefana. Throw it in his face. It means mitzvahs are worthless. There's Mispalo, nothing. There's no relationship to God. That's a Rasha. So definitely, his question was, is it possible that performances of mitzvos are worthless? Yes, certainly it's possible.
No, it wasn't my question.
What?
I'm saying, is it possible that
performances
of mitzvos
are bankrupt? Right. Last part of Mara. Last page of Mara.
There's pigeon?
But I can see why. But listen to the lesson. Listen, having stated the sublime ideas contained in that scriptural passage, okay, and quoted the explanation of our sages, we'll now complete what the remainder of that passage teaches us. The prophet does not content himself with explaining that the knowledge of God is the highest kind of perfection. For if this only had been his intention, he would have said, "But in this let him who glorieth glory, that he understandeth and knoweth me," and would have stopped there. Or he would have said that he understandeth and knoweth me that I am one, or that I have not any likeness, or that there is none like me, or a similar phrase. He says, however, that man can only glory in the knowledge of God and in the knowledge of his ways and attributes, which are his actions, as we have shown in expounding the passage, "Show me now thy ways." We are thus told in this passage that the divine acts which ought to be known and ought to serve as a guide for our actions are chesed, loving kindness, mishpat, judgment, and tzedakah, righteousness. Okay? Mm-hmm. The lesson is taught by the additional phrase in the earth. Because it says, the puzzle is, "Let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might, let not the rich man glory in his riches. But let him that glorieth glory in this, that he knoweth, that he understandeth and knoweth me." And I think the end of the pasuk is "Osa mishpat and tzedakah baris," right? Who does mishpat and tzedakah in the land? It doesn't have the end over here. No worry. But anyways, okay. So that's what it says. Now it says like this. He says it implies a fundamental principle of the law. It rejects the theory of those who boldly assert that God's providence does not extend below the sphere of the moon. And all right, anyways. Right, that's a metaphysical thing. It teaches, as has been taught by the greatest of all wise men, in the words, "The earth is the Lord's, and his providence extends to the earth in accordance with its nature, in the same manner as it controls the heavens in accordance with their nature." Alright? Later we have shown that the object of the enumeration of God's 13 attributes is the lesson that we should acquire similar attributes and act accordingly. The object of the above passage is therefore to declare that the perfection in which man can truly glory is attained by him when he has acquired, as this is possible for man, the knowledge of God, the knowledge of his providence, and the manner of which it influences his creatures in their production and continued existence. Having acquired this knowledge, he will then be determined always to seek loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness, and thus to imitate the ways of God. We have explained this many times in this treatise. This is all that I thought proper to discuss in this treatise, and which I consider useful for men like you. Okay.
Okay.
Person that does mishpat, tzedakah, chesed, the Mahawafata, that's the highest level. Alright? The highest level.
Isn't that what the Rambam doesn't know?
What is it? Oh, what the Rambam would seem to be saying is, we explained it before in terms of the his relationship to knowledge, his love of knowledge. And we said that all the actions that a person does, the ethical perfection is a means to attach him to knowledge, right? But it would seem over here that there's something else. There's a metaphysical thing besides. What is the metaphysical thing? What is the metaphysical thing? Valachta b'drachav. And valachta b'drachav is a metaphysical thing. Why? What the Rambam seems to be saying is that what? What does Rambam seem to be saying? He seems to be saying that if a person cannot simultaneously have true knowledge of God's ways, that was Moshe Rabbeinu's request, of God's ways and live in an opposite way. You see? In other words, that's right. In other words, like this. If a person lives in a way which is contrary to these midos, it means that his relationship to God is impossible. It's impossible for him to have a relationship with God. Because he is so distorted insofar as reality is concerned. Once a person understands God and he understands the world that God created and how this world is to be run, he understands God and he understands how God relates to the world and he sees the whole system and where his position is in this system, then he can. That is the beginning. That is the first step necessary for him to relate to the ultimate being, to God. You see. Now, if he doesn't. If he doesn't see this, then he is so far away from God that he has no relationship with him. That's why, you see, that's why a person who doesn't live properly, see, a person who doesn't live properly, it's not the pshat, the ethical perfection is not for the sake of ethical perfection. But the ethical perfection is there for the sake of a relationship with God. You see? Now, the ultimate life is one in which all his energies are diverted towards understanding reality. What's understanding reality? It's impossible for a person to understand reality unless he relates to the source of the reality. And so in the proper way. And relating to the source of the reality is only possible if he understands what the framework of the ultimate reality is. And the framework of the ultimate reality is the Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If he doesn't live that way, then it means inherently he has no relationship with the Supreme Being. If there's no relationship with the Supreme Being, so then his knowledge is faulty. See, knowledge can only be Knowledge means, what does knowledge really mean? Knowledge means understanding reality. Correct? Now the reality of all realities, the reality beyond all realities is God. That's the ultimate reality. Because when you understand it, you trace back the causes, you'll ultimately come to God. Now therefore a person who does not have any concept of this ultimate being is completely, in other words, he is not in any way approaching the ultimate reality. You see? One time I mentioned this, we asked the question, said, let's say for instance, we said, who has greater knowledge of God? Moshe Rabbeinu or Einstein? Right? One time I asked the question.
He said, right.
So that's the same thing over here. That's why reality has to be, the ultimate reality is God, because he's behind all the realities. Now, if a person denies God, so it's true he might have the facts, and he might understand the ratios, but he's missing the most basic, the most fundamental bit of knowledge, namely that there's a cause behind this. That's why it's so important, Yahadis, the first mitzvah is, Vadas, Sheyesh, Leda, Sheyesh, Elekan, Nimtza. Because through the knowledge of God, he has the first basic idea of what all these shadows are. It's the most important idea, you see. And similarly, that's what the Rambam means. The Rambam means if a person doesn't follow loving kindness, he doesn't follow Midas Hashem, it means he fails to understand the most basic thing about the whole structure of the universe. That the force, insofar as the force behind the universe is concerned. If he doesn't understand that, then all his searching is in the wrong direction. Because the searching has to be towards that force. All knowledge ultimately has to be towards that force. Now he is so far away from that force in terms of basic ideas. The Ma'aseh Hashem, the Midos HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which isn't even the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that God didn't answer him. But that's Midos HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's so far away from that force that his search is completely in the wrong direction. You follow? So therefore it will affect him in terms of knowledge. So the Midos aren't necessary. Ethical perfection as an end in itself, of course, is nothing. That's what Ram said. That's only possible. That's only purposeful if you have a society as an end in itself. But insofar as knowledge is concerned, it's very important. Insofar as metaphysical knowledge, because metaphysical knowledge means understanding that force behind all the physics that you see, and these basic things that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Midos HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tell us that this is the most basic thing about this force. Now, once you don't have this concept. You see, then you're missing the ideas concerning the most basic thing. So you might have a lot of ideas in the other in the details, but you're missing the one big idea, and the cause is a greater lack of knowledge than many small ideas insofar as the results are concerned. You know what I mean? Part of knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
There's a difference
yeah.
in the cause.
This individual, he gets up and he sees the cause. He sees the shadow. He sees what caused the shadow. Now, in one shot, he has more knowledge about shadows than this guy has with all his calculations. Because all the calculations are just accidental. He doesn't even now. This may, in other words, let's say, for instance, the guy walked by at 2 o'clock every day. Now he has all the calculations. He's going to know exactly how it's going to happen. But the one who saw the man, who saw the individual, he knows that the guy could miss 2 o'clock. It just so happened that once he came 2 o'clock every day, and the guy can miss his 2 o'clock stroll, and all his knowledge is he's in a quandary. You see, whereas this person has more of an understanding of the phenomena that are going on in the cave, you see, with one bit of knowledge than the other person has with all his calculations. So insofar as knowledge is concerned, knowledge concerning the original cause is far greater than knowledge than all the details involved in the results. You see, that's what the Rambam says. That's what the Rambam says in the end of the Gemara. That's what the Rambam says in the end of the Gemara. That when God told Moshe Rabbeinu the midos HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu said he wanted to know midos HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so when God conveyed to him those midos, these are basic ideas concerning the ultimate creator. Now if you don't have these basic ideas, then you're on the wrong track. Then what you're operating with is details. If you're operating with details, then you're lacking knowledge. So that's why ethical perfection insofar as ethical perfection per se is concerned isn't the purpose. But a person has to perfect himself ethically. Why? Because insofar as he's perfected ethically, that's how much he is related to the ultimate cause, and the search for knowledge is in the correct direction.
His actions are similar to knowledge of God.
That's right. Because I said a person that has knowledge of the whole system, has knowledge of God, knowledge of how the system works, and how God works, and God operates as far as the system on earth, can't possibly live in a way contrary to that, because he sees reality. He says, "One second, there's reality here." And the source of reality dictates this, dictates that. He placed me here, and this is my purpose, and this is what I'm doing. So therefore, he can't possibly act in a contrary way. If he does, then he doesn't really have knowledge of the source. I would say no. It's impossible because no person will live if a person lives contrary to the. To the knowledge, it's a sign that the knowledge really isn't part of nature.
It says, knowledge.
How do Yitzchak have giving over the brachas? Giving over the brachas, it seems to be, it's related to Yitzchak. That's like a superstitious idea. He's giving over the brachas, and therefore, if he gives it over to this one, is this one, the other one. I say, in order to understand this, let's take a look at another case of brachas that we have. Forget about Yitzchak for a minute. Another case of brachas that we have. We have brachas today also. Even though Yitzchak isn't here today, we still have brachas today. What are brachas today we have? Birchas Kehanim, right, exactly right. Birchas Kehanim. Birchas Kehanim is an interesting thing. The main Birchas Kehanim was a Migdash. Migdash. And a Migdash, but we have it today also, even Bigvulin. Now, Birchas Kehanim is an interesting thing. The Rambam asks a kasha. The Rambam says, he says, maybe you'll wonder, how could this Amoritz, who is a Kehanim, be Mavarach, this great Talmud Chacham? He says, that's no kasha. Why is no kasha? Because the pasuk says, "V'sonu es shmi al bnei Yisrael va'ani avarachei." Pasuk says it. Even the Kohanim and the Bracha, "Yivracha Hashem v'Yisrael." All right. "V'sonu es shmi bnei Yisrael va'ani avarachei" means the Kohen enunciates the words, but who is really the Mavarech? Hakadosh Baruch Hu is the pasuk. So you see that the pasuk says, "Straight va'ani avarachei." The only Mavarech is Rabbeinu Shlomo. There is no other Mavarech besides God. Now, so the question is, if that's the case, so what do you have to have the Birchas Kehanim for? In reverse? The answer is, because the bracha requires a certain situation in order to be realized. The situation is that there should be verbalization of the bracha, and that the Am should realize what the bracha is, and the Gemara says that by Birchas Kehanim, Kishem she'akayinu chayav levarach, kacho am chayav l'shmaya, they have to listen to every single word from the Kayin. So you see that the bracha, in order to be realized, requires a certain situation. The situation is that a person should recognize, as a matter of fact, that's why the halacha bracha is, if you stand in the back of the kohanim, you won't get the bracha. What does it mean you won't get the bracha, stand in the back of the kohanim? It has to be panim al panim. He has to have the realization that he is oimed l'fnei ha-shechina. And the mikdash really was shechina. That's why he wanted to look at the kohanim's hands. Mikdash shechina. He has to be in the state of mind that he recognizes he's oimed l'fnei ha-shechina, and this is the bracha that he's going to receive, and the bracha is from God. You see? The realization, this realization, is what is necessary in order for the bracha to be realized. God doesn't want to just give him a bracha that he doesn't know about. God wants that the bracha that he gets should be one which is comprehended, understood, And it should be understood in terms of who the Mevarech is. That's why it's Lifnei Hashchina. And back is no good. And also, it should be understood what the nature of the bracha is. You see? That's what the halacha is. Now, by Yitzchak was the exact same thing. Yitzchak had a tzavah that he had to give over this bracha. He knew he had to give over this bracha. Who he was to give it to, that he had to decide. Okay? But the thing was like this. The bracha would only be of value, just like by Berachas Kahanim, the situation was necessary. They had to be recipient of the bracha. The situation was necessary in order for the bracha to take place. Just the stam bracha in the world without anybody knowing about it is no good. He had to be omed before Yitzchak. And the pasuk says, "Va'avorechacha lifnei adei Shem lifnei maisi." The Gemara says that the bracha was given with Ruach HaKodesh. So it was omed lifnei Hashchina. It had to be in front of Yitzchak. He had to have the awareness that he's omed lifnei Hashchina. Concentrate on the words of the bracha, what the bracha meant. Understand the bracha. That was necessary in order for the bracha to be realized. The situation was necessary in order for the bracha to be realized. That's why it didn't matter what Yitzchak was machaven to. Because Yitzchak wasn't the Mavarech. If Yitzchak wasn't the Mavarech, the whole thing would be a fable. He wanted Esau. Yitzchak wasn't the Mavarech. HaKadosh Baruch was the Mavarech. Yitzchak was only a means in creating the situation which was necessary for the bracha to be realized. He was the one that created the Gilui Shechina, because it was given through Ruach HaKodesh, and the one who stood before him and who understood, knew that he's standing before the Shechina and understood what the brachas meant, that was the one that was going to receive it. And Yitzchak knew one thing. He knew that once it would only be done once. That was it. That's why when Esav came in, and Esav said, Gam Baruch Hiya. He said, who was the one who came and took the brachas? Gam Baruch Hiya. Because Ramban says, he knew, since it was given through Ruach HaKodesh, he knew that this was the way it had to be given over. But the Mevarech was not Yitzchak. The Mevarech was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The brach of Yitzchak Lakim, Mital Shamayim. We don't have any Mevarech in Klal Yisrael besides Rabbi Yishalom. And that's a basic thing in Yehadis. The Mevarech is Rabbi Yishalom. But the situation was necessary because the bracha, God didn't want to just give a bracha. Just like by Berachas Kahanim. The bracha has to be given to man, that man should be in a certain state of realization of what the bracha is, from who it is, has to be Lefanov, and that's why it was the one that was Aymed Lefanov that got the bracha. Who was Aymed Lefanov? It was Yaakov was Aymed Lefanov. That's why, that was the important thing. Okay.
The woman, no more strength left, Hannah.
Who got this? Who's this?
I don't know. Where'd you get it from? Ross, pull it out. Put it right here. Load up. I read the book, so like it was no surprise.
What?
What?
No,
tobacco?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You read the book?
Yeah, a couple years
ago. I didn't read the book. Nobody could ask. You know when I saw the first kid?
Nobody could ask. So fat.
No, but I know that's what he was working with. I didn't
read the book.
They had black hair instead of mine. It wasn't really pure Aryan.
Really?
They had to redefine him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
They made him the pure Aryan. They said he's the, like, he's the singular. He's the only Aryan like that. That's why he's Hitler.
And you know
what?
Okay, Kerry, that's
what I want to know.
What do you want to know?
He says he's very angry.
No, I just want to know what you're doing. I don't care.
Oh, you mean now?
Yeah.
Just keep me personally. What I'm doing is such a damn
thing. Oh, I think you're watching the J game. I don't know if I ask. No, what are they doing here? I figured that much out.
That's not right. That'll exactly put
it. You finished, you start doing the tape again.
Oh, yeah, I'm starting now for you. I got a bottle there.
Alright, then when you finish this,
we'll
have just a couple bottles.
Yes, man.
Okay.
Hey, calm down. Alright.
It's everything from Washington.
Just go. I'm not going there.
Let's kill us, man.
Wow.
What was Kelly's doing there?
He wrote a
Talmud
class. He always
gives
the Talmud
class when he's away. He
always
gives
what? The Talmud class? Talmud.
Talmud. I don't know what this
so
is.
So I guess he stayed away from Memphis. I don't know.
But
he was really
there.
Look at that
part.
Is it
what? He was really there. Okay. Like a really earth guy. Couldn't understand why. You're a star watcher. No.
Is it playing over?
What?
I said, they're and they said, this is what you really should know. This is what you do when you should get to the name. He didn't know what Yeshiva was. And then Rabbi Ben got up. He said a few words. He said, I was speaking in honor of my grandfather. And it's great to see that he's learning very good Yeshiva. And how the motherfucker in Yeshiva makes all my shit. And I looked at the guy.
Oh, that's great.
So it came off good?
Yeah, it came
off
very well.
Right,
like, people like it.
He did, really?
He loved
that.
Okay. Yeah, he said, helps him a lot. I don't know how, but he said,
it helps him a lot, yeah?
Yeah. I know it's not a second, that's what he said.
So where's he from?
I thought what you told me, that only one would appreciate that.
He's learning. He's learning. Ben, yeah, no, Ben's
where's he from?
He from the old days.
Old first time. From the first time. There. He's in the first group from the dirt.
Hmm?
He's in the forefather.
Yeah, he
my father came in. He was there.
That's okay. He didn't feel violent. Yes.
He actually lived in London.